Off the Ball, GAA.
You would have associated Cork with small, nippy players. That seems to be changed now to big, nippy players.
Join in the obsession. Subscribe now at offtheball.com/join.
The Six Nations
on Off the Ball.
With Bank of Ireland, a proud sponsor of Irish rugby. Never stop competing.
Welcome along. It is time for the Six Nations show. Ireland have made three changes, a couple of them in force for the game against the defending champions England in Cork this Saturday. We'll get into all of that. It's been difficult against England really since 2018 particularly. Every team in the Six Nations has found it hard. They haven't been beaten in the tournament since their loss to France that season. Part of the team that year, England's most capped player, former World Player of the Year, Sarah Hunter is here with us. Sarah, welcome along to the programme.
Hi, thanks for having me on. It's been a pleasure to join you.
Great stuff. We've got Anna Capeless here, former Ireland back row as well. Anna, how are you?
Good, thanks. Now, more sport this weekend.
Oh, you can't shake a stick at the amount of sport we have this weekend. Masters, Champions Cup, Six Nations, all the Gaelic games across the weekend as well. It's a manic weekend. Look, the tail of the tape on this one. England have had complete and utter dominance. We'll talk about the game at Twickenham last season, 88 points to 10. But England now, 22 games in a row they've won, 31 Six Nation games in a row. This goes back, the last defeat was the World Cup final. Haven't lost in the competition, I mentioned, since France in the 2018 season. Ireland have only ever beaten England twice in this tournament as well. Sarah, at the moment, you're on maternity leave. You're not with the coaching team despite having coached this team since you retired, but you're motoring very nicely in a home World Cup year so far.
Yeah, you know, it's very much the focus on the Six Nations, and I know that's a real cliche, but I think Six Nations can help you develop your squad, like the depth of your squad. That can help you tactically look about where you are in preparation for the World Cup. And whilst I'm not in camp, I know that the team will be very much focused on the thing that is the most, like, at the forefront of their mind, which is Ireland this weekend. Ireland away from home is a tough proposition. You look back to 2023, and England didn't have it all their own way. Like, Ireland got, like, stuck into them, caused some issues, caused some problems. And that was before Scott Beaman came in. And that was before sort of the reignition of this Ireland side. So I know you look at the result last year at Twickenham, and that has to be put to bed. You've heard Scott this week talk around, like, we've learned from that, we've been open, we've honest, we've talked about it. Ireland are now a very different team to Twickenham last year. And I think they're one of the informed teams in world rugby at the moment. And I'm sure they'll be wanting to put out a good marker back at home this weekend after their campaign so far.
Sarah, I'm not trying to butter up England here, I promise. And this is the way you always start with a guest when you come in. But England have won by an average of over 40 points over the last 30 games in this championship. There's always the possibility a team gets a little bit soft when they are beating the opposition by that many. But England continue to maintain this very high standard of play, and we've seen that in the first two games of this tournament as well. What's the key to England being as strong as they have been, particularly since the last World Cup final?
I think there's probably a couple of things in training. We're very fortunate of the depth that we do have now, especially within our training squad. So you've almost got two world-class 15s, like, training against each other. So the competitive nature in probably each position, trying to vie to get that starting shirt. Players are playing week in, week out in the PWR as well. And I think that's really enhanced the domestic game, that they're getting competitive games more regularly, like, during the season. And I think, like every international player, they're so driven that actually that they're trying to be the best they can be individually and collectively, like, day in, day out. And whilst some games aren't necessarily competitive all the way through, there'll be moments in those games that they'll look back and go, well, at that period of time, we were in a bit of an arm wrestle, we were in a battle, like, well, what have we learned from that? How did we problem solve our way out of that? How did we stay in it a bit too long? So it's trying to utilise maybe those score lines where there are bigger margins, really delving in deeper to try and, like, take some real key learnings for the next games.
Anna, not to get off the beaten track, but on the break week, it seemed you had a very enjoyable weekend. I had Fiona Hayes with us on the show last night. You were kind of hosting them in La Rochelle, it would seem, some of the Munster ex-players last week. And I presume you had a lovely day on Saturday watching Munster go through.
It was quiet enough now, I must say. It was absolutely class. Like, I actually kind of can't believe after such a massive weekend like that, that we're turning around again. And the next round is the next closest French city to me here in La Rochelle, which is so bizarre. So obviously, you know, got my train ticket straight away. I'm lining up some match tickets. So like, unbelievable weekend during the off week of the Women's Six Nations, because the weekend before, France were playing Scotland here in La Rochelle. So it just has been bang, 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 relentless rugby centre, and I'm absolutely loving it. So, you know, bring it on. Quarterfinal and Women's Six Nations back this weekend. It doesn't stop.
No, it's not bad. Bordeaux, as you said, just a little bit up the coast. It works out perfectly. The Munster fans who are trying to break the piggy bank, you're not quite in the same situation, Annie. You've got an easier trip to make this week.
Yeah, I was just hopping on the train. So I know, and it's hard for fans actually to, you know, there was such an unbelievable turnout. And like, I've been here for two seasons now, and Leinster have been here the last two seasons. And I kept telling everyone, no, I promise, Munster will be different, Munster will be different. And like, I still kind of struggling to put it into words, to be honest. Like, walking around, it was like a mini version of Cardiff in 2006, 2008. That's what it felt like. It was just amazing, and the sun was out, and the result, and the rugby itself, and like the response from the La Rochelle crowd. One of the rugby days like that I'll never forget. And now, yeah, let's see if we can top it this weekend.
I want to ask both of you about this. I'll ask you first, but Anna, just about where the Six Nations is fitting in the calendar now. Like, we're a couple of years into this calendar that's moved away a little bit from being aligned with the men's season, and it has its own block. There's advantages and disadvantages. As you say, Champions Cup weekend with the quarterfinals, obviously Munster's going to take a bit of attention. At the same time, maybe this England-Ireland game wouldn't be on the BBC if it was back in the slot with the men's games. How is this change working for you over the last couple of seasons, Anna?
Oh, I know, it's hard actually, because like I say, it feels relentless. You're like, okay, where do I fit it in? Where do I fit it in? But that's, you know, when this was suggested, first of all, I remember because I was in the squad when this was suggested, and I loved the weekends, the Six Nations weekends, where you had the under-20s, the men's and the women's all at the same time. And it was so enjoyable. Like the sorry, it's probably a bit of background noise there. I remember thinking when they suggested, I was like, oh, I don't know about this, but I think it's worked. As difficult as it is to balance, I think it has worked, and it's bringing in extra support and extra like people talking about it, because it's not competing with those Six Nations fixtures. It might be competing with Champions Cup, but it's somehow working for now. I think it's been a really positive move.
Yeah, Sarah, they were telling us at the launch in London a few weeks back that, again, kind of all the metrics were that it hasn't suffered from being decoupled from the 20s and from the men's. And actually, they were finding viewer figures were improving, the engagement around social media, all these kind of, I suppose, crucial metrics they look at. The organisers very much telling us they were happy with how the first few seasons of this have been working.
Yeah, I agree with Anna. Like, obviously, being part of a major competition like the Six Nations and having that feeling of like being part of something. But I think it's probably been the best thing we can for the women's game. Like, I guess I don't know the ins and outs of the fingers, but anecdotally, like, you're looking around every nation and they're beating their crowds for the most people, that attendance crowds figures, viewing figures, people watching, people turn up, people talking about it. And it might be because in England we don't tend to go as far in the Champions Cup as maybe some of the Irish teams. So maybe that's a bit of a different angle that probably fits quite well for the English teams. But I just think it's been brilliant, the visibility that it's shown. Like, I almost felt at times that whilst as a player it was brilliant to be part of that weekend, like a Six Nations weekend, I just felt sometimes we got lost, like the women's tournament got lost amongst everything else, where actually now we're a standalone tournament in a window where it's a bit warmer. You know, we're not necessarily always playing in the sort of cold and rain that you get earlier on in the month. Like, look at this weekend, the previous weekends have been beautiful, and does that attract more people as well? And I just think it puts the spotlight solely on the Women's Six Nations. So I think it's been a really positive thing. And I think that's the great thing about women's rugby, is that because there's maybe less stakeholders, less maybe history to it, that we're like, oh, we don't want to change it. Actually, we're really forward thinking and positive in going, well, let's give it a go. If it doesn't work, we could move it back. But actually, I think it's been a really positive step forward in growing the game for the women's side.
The team came out for Ireland just before we came on. So three changes have been made. A couple of them are due to injury. So Emily Koskin is going to be captain. That's because Adele McMahon has been ruled out. Enya Breen won't be able to play in the centre. Both are injured. And so the three players that are coming in, you've got Dorothy Wall, Brittany Hogan come into the pack, and Emily Lane is going to play at scrum half. So I'll give you the full team first of all, and I'll get your take on it then. So fullback's going to be Stacey Flood. Anna McGann on the back of her try-scoring exploits the last time out against Italy. Centres then are Eve Higgins and Aoife Dalton. You've got Amy Lee Koskin captaining on the other wing. Dane O'Brien, Emily Lane are going to be the halfbacks, and then your pack is Niamh O'Dowd, Niamh Jones and Lindy Dugang are going to be the front row. You've got Dorothy Wall and Fiona Tweet in the second row. Brittany Hogan, Erin King, Aoife Wafer is in incredible form, is going to be the back row. So that's the starting team. Like, the injuries aren't ideal, Anna, but is that a weaker team or a weakened team compared to what played in Parma?
It's slightly different to the Parma team, but it's more similar to the team that played France in Belfast. So I actually have my notes from the last time I spoke to you and off the ball about this, and there's very few changes there. Like, is Fiona Chute coming in to join Darrow in the second row and moving Ruth Campbell to the bench. That's where there seems to be a bit of movement. Like, the back row is nailed on, the front row is nailed on, the centre partnership is nailed on. You've Emily Lane, who swapped out with Aveen Riley. That's a good little trio partnership there. Like, the nines kind of pushing each other, but Dan O'Brien's nailed on. And like, it's so funny looking back, reflecting on the first team that played against France. You look at Anna McGann, who was, you know, arguably the least experienced. She only had six caps coming into that French game. And, you know, after scoring a hat-trick against Italy, she's not maybe one of the most talked-about players. Like, if you were considering, you know, the least capped player as a weakness, well, she certainly refuted that. And it's just such a strong team. And, like, the two kind of big injuries there with Adele McMahon, who kind of was still in a captaincy role, even from the bench. And then you've Enya Breen, who's also one of the leaders. They're two kind of good, strong boys. NC aides that have now been taken out, and you've got some, you know, good experience coming in there with Grace Moore and like some really like strong backup still, but it's just a little bit of leadership that's gone missing this weekend, which against England, you know, you'd absolutely love to have, but in essence, it's still a mightily strong team that I know is going to be absolutely gunning for this game. And when you look at the last time out in Cork, where they were held scoreless, and Sarah's right, you know, they made England work for it. And you know, the game last year where it was actually surprisingly kind of at the beginning, a lot of people were expecting a lot from Ireland last year when they went to Twickenham. It was like going into the lion's mouth, really, and it was actually the biggest losing margin for an Irish team, which goes to, you know, kind of back up Sarah's point there about like the team just getting the most, the English team I should say, getting the most out of themselves and not, you know, relaxing and completely enjoying themselves and pushing themselves. Like, I know from playing when I played for Bowes, I played for UL Bowes for about 5 or 6 years before I lost a match. And once you start to kind of get bored in those games, like that, Sarah's saying there about a 48-0 win for England. England were made work for that, like, for sure. If you're an English player who missed a tackle, was a little bit slow to a breakdown, you know, missed a line out, that's what you're thinking of after the match. You're not thinking, well, that was easy, job done, off we go. You're so focused on the high performance aspect, which is how do I get better, how do I get better? And that's what this English team is doing and how they are getting there. So, you know, I'm excited for the Irish team to kind of put right the last two results, because they're certainly on the up, you know, which we've all seen. So how can they manage it now is going to be interesting.
Yeah, like Anna, you mentioned Anna McGann, you're coming in from the Sevens programme. Unfortunately, the injury really wrecked her year last year for the Olympics when she was going well with them. But Stacey Flood's going to be in the papers tomorrow. She was speaking yesterday and I was just looking at her quotes before they come out. And she was talking about the fact that some of the Sevens players feel really comfortable in the setup this year because they've been 15s focused because of the World Cup coming up, maybe slightly different to the Olympics last year. I won't call attention, but maybe where players are being pulled around in the couple of years before this, maybe it fits a bit more easily for Scott Beaman to have more access to them this season.
Yeah, there definitely has been, like, in years gone by, pulling and dragging between the programs. And, like, I don't know if you remember, like, years ago, I can't put my finger on what year, but, like, we're starting the Six Nations and all of a sudden the star players are pulled out to go to the Seven Series in Atlanta. That was very controversial.
I do remember this. So it was just before the Italy game. And I think, as I recall, was it like Alison Miller, Senni Naipoo, and maybe one of the other players was pulled away
Hannah
that weekend?
Tyrrell.
And that was it.
Hannah Tyrrell, yeah. The Atlanta Three. You know, it became controversial. It was a really good talking point. Mm. You know, when people were saying, hang on a second, this isn't right to kind of have players drift kind of and not of their own choice, you know, like, I'm sure it's such an honor anyway. You're going to say yes to every opportunity you're given, but it hasn't been managed the best in the past. So it's really nice to hear, like, Stacey saying that and to see, like, you know, Amy Lee coming in with a captaincy role and you know, the Sevens players being given time in the 15s program to, like, fully show what they're capable of and not have a kind of something out the corner of their eye where they're like, oh, the Olympics is after, or oh, the World Cup is after. That also then allows the Sevens team to blood new players while they're away in, you know, Singapore or Hong Kong, and it hasn't been easy for them, but that's how we grow the Sevens game alongside the 15s game and manage it better. So that it's certainly gone to show. And like you say, the hat trick from Anna McGann. It's funny, we haven't got to see Amy Lee, like, cross the line too much, like, but it just, you know, really, she's one of the highest try scorers in the Sevens series, and, like, the fact we haven't seen it that much from her yet in the 15s just goes to show how different of a game it is. But, like, to have her there with her captaincy, that's a huge honour for her. I think it's being managed super well, especially in a World Cup 15s year.
Yeah, Sarah, like, England have probably got a little bit more strength and depth, so it's not been quite the pull and drag of players when it comes to 7 and 15s and the same experience we've had. I don't know how you'd find it if you were coaching a squad or if you were in a playing squad at the moment, if potentially two or three of your best players could end up having to go on the 7 circuit in the middle of Six Nations, because that's been the experience in Ireland for the last 4 or 5 years particularly.
Yeah, I mean, it's certainly something that I think England have experienced back when Sevens went into the Olympics in 2016. So after we won the World Cup in 2014, we lost virtually all our backline to Sevens. And it is tough. Like, we played Wales in the 2015 Six Nations and as world champions and lost. And it's difficult for players, I think, both sides that are in either camps and don't move. Like, I was never a Sevens player, so I was never going to go across and play. So you see people do being pulled here and there. And I think the key, Anna has alluded to, is that management of it, about going, well, where's the focus? Well, it was Olympics last year, so let's prioritise that. Well, actually, now it's World Cup year, let's bring them. And give players time in those environments from, like, 7s and 15s, while it's rugby, of two completely different sports, really, in terms of the way you play it and like how your body needs to be conditioned for it and things like that. So you've got to allow players the ability to have time in either camp, whatever it is, so that they get the best out of them. And then also, if you're bringing players from 7s to 15s or vice versa, given time for those squads to gel, to understand each other, to build that culture, to build that teamship. So actually, they're collectively performing as one. It's not like, oh, well, we've got some 7s players back and we're the 15s and it's clunky, it doesn't fit right. And from obviously what Stacey Flood's alluding to, it's like, it's now a lot better, and you can now see that coming across on the pitch. Like, they look gelled, they look unified, they look like they've spent a good proportion of time together building those relationships, understanding people's running lines, understanding how people communicate, talk to each other, how they get the best out of each other. It's no strange that they've seen performance come out of it, because these programs are now probably being managed a little bit better. Players understand where they fit, where the priority is, and we can see Ireland reaping the benefits from that.
We had media day yesterday, so this is what Scott Beamon had to say when he was asked by the reporters whether it's possible that Ireland could pull off a win in Cork on Saturday.
We're just excited to get back out there and to show people that our game has grown over the last 12 months. Where, you know, we produced a result against New Zealand, we were disappointed in Canada. You come back into the Six Nations and it's obviously a massive local competition, isn't it? And we spoke at the very start about trying to close the gap on your Frances and your Englands. So to sit here now saying, well, we were disappointed against France to not win a game that we felt we were capable of winning. Now we welcome England here, and you know, we all know what happened last year, and we're an honest group, happy to talk about it, but we feel we've moved our game on. Hopefully with the result last week, and you know, us managing to keep the scoreboard ticking and get to a 50, which we haven't done in recent times. So hopefully it's showing that the competence and confidence of the group is growing. We believe we're further down the road than we were a year ago, and we think we can fire some shots this weekend. So look, we want to make it really difficult for them. If we're in the game and we get our wheels starting to turn, we think we can cause some problems. So we're looking forward to seeing a full crowd down in Cork.
There you go, Scott Beamon speaking ahead of the game. Look, Sarah, obviously he's got such links with this England team. He's coached with this group and many of these players, so he knows them very well as well. Can you give us a bit of an insight into, because I met Scott Beamon for the first time at the team hotel about 2 weeks before the tournament last year, and he was insistent that they were going to qualify for the World Cup. And that was after Ireland having all this emotional scarring of a couple of years of poor results. But he was very confident things could turn around quickly. It's been a really good 2024. Good result against Italy last time round. What is it about Scott Beamon that it seems that he has the touch to improve things with this group?
Yeah, I think he can hear from what you say. He's very enthusiastic. He brings a lot of energy to groups. So I'd imagine when he first comes in, he's come to a programme because he thinks he can make it better. He knows he can make it better. He's worked within like one of the best teams in the world, and like the success that comes with that and having that and actually bringing that to a new team. That actually, if you look at that team, like before Scott was coming, they're still majority of the same players. So actually it's understanding how potentially you get the best out of those players, putting what had happened to one side and going almost as a fresh start. And the fact that I'd imagine how he's gone in there, got them to believe in themselves, brought that energy around the team, each other, what they're capable of. Like, and like when Scott believes in something, you can see it. He'll want to make change. He'll want to do it. And I think from looking on the outside in, it seems like the players are bought into him and how he wants to play. You can see like they've changed in how they play and what he's brought to the team, and you've seen that's come in the results that they've had, and it's a great talented squad. I think it just needed to be nurtured in the right way given all the past and history and baggage that had being around the Ireland team, which when, again, you're looking from the outside in, you just felt for the players that maybe they just didn't have the right people in there to get the best out of them. And it seems like Scott and the team that he's got around him are certainly doing that at the minute.
Yeah, because like Anna, all the markers over the last 11, 12 months, they're hitting them. So the qualification for the World Cup, top three finish in the Six Nations was the goal. To be disappointed in a couple of the games in the WXV1, but also getting that headline win against New Zealand. Again, putting 50 points in Italy the last day. And being a bit disappointed, I would say, when the game was in the mix with 15 minutes to go against France. This has really got them to a significantly higher level than where they were 2 years ago. I think we might have lost Anna there. Can you hear us, Anna? We'll get Anna fixed up again. Sarah, I'll ask you about how England are shaping.
Sorry, I'm there. I heard most of what you said. Can you hear me?
I can hear you now perfectly. Yeah, we're back going again. Now, the question was going to be just how Ireland have improved here. So, you know, disappointed with the games that didn't go their way in the WXV1, beat New Zealand, qualified for the World Cup last time out, disappointed probably the last 15 minutes against France. Like, this is quite an upsurge in a short period of time compared to 2 years ago.
Yeah, completely. And you mentioned there about hitting all their markers. Like, I wonder, well, Scott Beaman said it there. Now, he didn't say, yeah, I definitely think we'll win this weekend. It's actually kind of nice. And I was chatting to one of the Scottish girls there when she came to La Rochelle, and she was saying, do you know, the France and England week is always an interesting one, because actually the pressure is a little bit off because you don't have to win. You just have to play your absolute best, and it's kind of a nice place to be. Whereas, you know, against, when it comes to the teams a little bit closer at your level, the pressure is on for results and points and that. Like, not saying that everyone's like, oh, don't mind, you know, turning. People want to play their best. And I think that, you know, what Scott Beaman's saying there, like, fire some shots, that would be the marker of success this weekend. They don't have to win. The Irish team does not have to win this weekend. But like, to talk about like firing shots, like, it's interesting. And talking about WXV1 as well. So the Jess Breach has a podcast with Ellie Kildon. It's really nice to get like current players' insight, and they speak very openly, honestly, and it's one of the things that is coming with, you know, women's rugby at the moment, and the content that's being created, that's absolutely awesome, and the insight into what it looks like now. But Jess Breach said that for the first time, maybe for her, in an English jersey against Canada, the thought crossed her mind that, oh my God, we might lose here. So the first time against Canada, or the first time in a match like that, that wasn't a World Cup final, she felt like they could lose. I reckon if Ireland could get one or two, or the full English pack, to think for even a second that they might lose this game, that is a massive message to send out to England themselves coming into a World Cup, and to the Irish, because you can sense that. You can sense when you have a team like that, could you get under their skin for longer than 60 minutes? Because often Ireland has been able to do that. Stay with the team for 60 minutes, see you later in the last 20 minutes. If they can really worry England, they don't really have to win. Like, you know, it's firing shots is what Scott Beaman is talking about there. It's just, make people raise some eyebrows would be a marker of success against England this weekend, I think.
Mm. Sarah, with England dealing with this level of expectation, with everything that's been achieved in the last 2 years and these dominant performances, how does the weight of a home World Cup sit on their shoulders? Because it was when France were getting ready for the men's World Cup last time around, it's all everyone talked about in 2022 and 23 was France getting ready for a home World Cup. How are the English women's team dealing with this at the moment?
I think obviously it's amazing to have a home World Cup, and having played in one previously, like, it's on a different scale this time. And I think at the minute, like, the way they're dealing with it is not talking about it. Like, you know what I mean? It's a focus on very much the Six Nations at the minute, because I think if you, the way the women's game is and has developed, that if England's now go out, well, I'll start thinking about the World Cup. Like, they're taking their eye off the ball, and there's one thing that they won't want to do is take their eye off the ball, because we saw WXV Ireland beat New Zealand, probably weren't expecting that. Like Anna's already touched on it, Canada ran England close in WXV. Like, England have got a go away to Ireland, also got to play Scotland and France. And if you start thinking about the next job, like, you lose sight of what the important thing is now. And there will be a time when they do have to come to that. It won't be too far from just looking internally about what their own pressure that the team was putting on themselves, or how they communicate that, and keeping their feet firmly on the floor and just taking one step at a time. And I think you have to. I think you look at the Lionesses when they played at home in the Euros, and you hear some of them speak, and they were like, well, we just take one game, we go on to the next venue, and then they kind of built that pressure momentum, and then they got to a final, and then they kind of had the whole of the nation behind them. And I think that's just, it's very cliche. And I think sometimes the press, the public want to hear something else, but as sports people that have gone through it, that's always the way you have to think of the next job. That's the most important thing. And I think that almost helps you deal with pressure. I think if you start thinking about things too far in advance, it sometimes becomes overwhelming. You get a sense of, oh my God, like, that's coming, when actually just stay in the moment, stay present, stay in the moment, deal with that, and then you can move on to the next thing. Because if you don't, what you're thinking about in the future might be very different, because you haven't dealt with what's the imminent task at hand.
Because I would think as well, Sarah, as an athlete, it's probably easy to maybe have August and September in your calendar ready to go. But at the same time, you have the tail end of the domestic season coming into the Six Nations. They'll get a bit of a break. They'll probably go back into camp in June, play the pre-World Cup games. And you have to kind of be hitting all those little markers along the way before you can think about the kickoff of the World Cup itself.
Absolutely bang on. There's so much going on. Like, yes, the World Cup's coming in August, but for the players, they've got so much to get through. Like, Six Nations, off season, back in, and especially the England girls. Like, I think John Mitchell's going to have a tough job on his and Anna's coaches in terms of rising up, because the depth that there is in a majority of positions, like, this, people are going to be fighting to get a spot in the World Cup squad, never mind thinking about getting to a game. Like, so I think that's got to be the players focus first and foremost.
The Six Nations show here in Off the Ball is a Bank of Ireland, a proud sponsor of Irish rugby. Never stop competing. And I want to do a quick check-in yourself, because you were chatting to Owen the last time ahead of the France game, and you were saying you'd had a bad knock and a bad concussion. How have things been in the few weeks since?
I was just saying to Sarah there before he came online that it's still there. Moving slowly, you know, everyone's like, are you better? 100% better, you're actually not better at all. So still not 100%, frustratingly. As I had said, I was planning on retiring at the end of this season. And I don't think there's enough time for me to return before the end of this season, which is really, really sad. And really, I'm dealing with that at the moment as well. And obviously there's all these like really exciting things that are happening in rugby, and me, I'm excited to continue my coaching career, which I've found difficult to balance between the two and really get stuck into coaching. So I know that's my next thing, but I'm just kind of half holding off grieving my playing career at the moment. And I'm very lucky that I never dealt with a concussion this bad throughout my 18 years playing rugby. I'm just really sad that it has come now. And I feel like, you know, I was really adamant at the beginning of this season that I was going to play one more. We won the championship last year with La Rochelle Division 2, and I really wanted to like go again, get us up to Division 1 and kind of be like, okay, that's it. I feel really, you know, ready to depart now. So I'm disappointed that it looks like that's going to be gone for me, but I'm just going to try and you know, help out whatever way I can. It's just kind of hard. I just have such an urge to play. I'm sure, Sarah, you felt like this, like, you know, because we both played the same position as well. Like, I'm just such an urge to run with the ball, and like, I'm watching training and I can't do it, and I can't even go in the gym. I'm very lucky, I can go on the bike. I love cycling, and I cycle over the bridge from La Rochelle to Ile de Ré like a couple of times a week, and it takes me an hour. But I can't do 5 minutes on the bike inside the gym because it gives me headaches. So I'm lucky that I've got outside and that I can do. But it's been tough, and I don't know if I'll come out of it. And I don't know if this is already, I've already played my last game of rugby.
Yeah, I hope that's not the case. Sarah, did you have any experiences through it? I mean, as Anna has said, you play in positions where you stick your head in, where you're going to take contact injuries, and this is a risk. But did you have many concussions during your career?
Yes, I feel, I was saying to Anna earlier that I had a couple of concussions, and I don't know whether it's in females they seem to take longer, but I also had a prolonged recovery, and it's one of the hardest injuries because physically you're more than capable of doing everything. Nobody can see the concussion. People keep asking if you're all right, and mentally it's one of the hardest things I've sort of your personality when it's bad. And like, I think that impacts how relationships with people and your teammates, and it definitely was hard. And like Anna says, you get to a point, you're like, I just want to run. But I think there's so much more awareness now on the protocols and safety and return that you do want to follow them, because actually you want your brain health to be good because you're a long time retired. But it doesn't stop that inner like rugby player in you. Because you say, like, you're not physically unable to do anything, and it does play with you, and it's certainly one of the hardest injuries that I've had to rehab, and you've just got to listen to your body, unfortunately, and you want to speed up, but your brain will recover at whenever your brain can do.
For sure, Anna, I would presume your coaching career. Do you intend to continue it in France? I mean, this is the joy of you speaking a few different languages. You can move around if you need to go work somewhere else. But is France where you'd like to coach, or would you like to coach closer to home?
I wouldn't mind doing a bit of gallivanting for a year or a season, because the thing is, like, once you commit to a club, it's hard to take like other opportunities. So there are opportunities that pop up for me. Here and there, like last year I was invited to coach in India. Always want to go to Dubai. Like, there's so many different places I'd love to go, but when you're committed to a club, you can't take those opportunities. So I'd love to do a year of just kind of going where I can, taking whatever opportunities come my way, and then look at like committing to a club, gather as much experience as I can. I'd be happy to go to France. I'm really interested in rugby in Argentina because I played there a long time ago, and the women's game in Argentina is like, you know, really, really in the very early development stages. So, yeah, I'm not tied down to France, even though I do like it here. I'd go wherever. I'd love to go back to Japan because I study Japanese, and you know, I have all these languages, and that's why I learn them, is to use them. So let's see, wherever the wind blows, I reckon.
What a polyglot, Sarah. Japanese, I think Anna's got a bit of Spanish, she's got French as well. Very, very impressive, Sarah, isn't it?
Yeah, she's putting us to shame, isn't she? I'm currently just done 365 days of Duolingo on in French, and I think I know about as much as I do now as I did when I started. So I definitely think I'd only be able to go to English speaking countries, that's for sure.
I'd say
you have to take a coaching job in France, and don't let them use you to practice their English. That is the key.
I was wondering that, Anna, when I saw you at Ulton Deland there. Now, Ulton obviously had the French as well, so he didn't have to really worry about relearning when he went across to La Rochelle. But does that happen to you, where French speakers are going, right, this is a great chance, we got an English speaker here to practice as much as we can?
Oh, absolutely. Like, at the beginning of the season, you know, a lot of people say to me, oh, Annie, you must be really talented at languages. It's like, I'm not, but I'm good now at the strategies because I have studied languages. And I know, like, French is my sixth language to add to the list. And I just knew when I came in, create a French speaking environment, like from the word go. And like, you know, the girls were like, oh, Anna, we thought we'd get to practice our English with you. I was like, absolutely not. I came to learn French. This has to stay a French speaking environment, which actually makes it kind of isolating at the start because you can't fully connect with people because you don't have the vocabulary or, you know, the correct grammar or things. But it certainly paid off for me, like within a couple of months, able to chat to people. Like I can, you know, the people in the coffee shops, and especially in a town like La Rochelle where everyone's rugby obsessed, like everyone is ready to talk about rugby all the time. And it's just given me like a different access. Just like speaking a language gives you the extra level of access to understand a culture and a people. And so that's, if there are any like budding linguists out there, don't ever let anyone use you to practice their English. You got to be like borderline rude about it. Just be like, no, and don't let them say to you, oh, just say it in English. So that's my advice, Sarah. When you come to France now, don't let them don't let them practice their English with you.
What's my attempts in Marseille ahead of the Champions Cup final a couple of seasons ago to shame? Duolingo completed it, mate. Folks, it's been great to have you on. Enjoy the game at the weekend as well. Thanks a million.
Thanks, Will.
Thank you. Bye-bye. Bye.
The Six Nations on Off the Ball
with Bank of Ireland, a proud sponsor of Irish rugby. Never stop competing.